Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest for this morning is Asher Fox. He is a fitness expert and author of the best-selling book, Fat to Fearless. Asher and I will be discussing how we can enjoy permanent weight loss and end emotional eating for good. Good morning, Asher. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. It is a pleasure to have you on the air with me. Thank you for taking the time to be with me on Eve of New Year's Eve.
Yes.
The release of Fat to Fearless is perfect timing. Everyone is gearing up for 2015. I know I am. With an attitude of a new year, new me. The book is a great read. It is substantial and very thorough. You did an excellent job in addressing the root challenge we all face and offered a compelling solution to it. Congratulations.
Great. Thank you very much. Yes, I've been very pleased. The book was a number one Amazon bestseller a couple of months ago. So the reception of it has been very good. And I think that, you know, the timing of it is really perfect, not just because it's the first of the year, but I think just as a society, you know, we're kind of reaching the point where we're really willing to look deeper and understand, you know, about a lot of things, but, you know, what really is going on with the challenges we face in life. So I think both, you know, at a larger scale and, you know, it being January, it's certainly a great timing.
Yes, certainly. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, sure, absolutely. I was an overweight child. And, you know, suffered with all of the things that go along with that, you know, self-esteem issues, feelings of being unattractive, feelings of being unworthy, unlovable. You know, and obviously those, you know, compound as you age and you begin dating and all of those types of things. So, you know, I very much struggled with that all of my life. And eventually, after having a series of back surgeries and almost being paralyzed, I decided that, you know, the best way that I could kind of conquer this problem, you know, was to become a personal trainer. So I thought, you know, when I went off to college, I thought I'm going to be a personal trainer and this will solve so many problems. I'll be able to lose weight. I'll have a better social life. I will, you know, kind of be able to be that ideal guy that I imagined being in that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it went very well on one hand. I became very successful. I actually owned what was one of the largest personal training studios in Florida, with three locations and all of these sorts of things, the kind of the trappings of success, but yet I never really found that personal success, you know, that I was looking for. As a matter of fact, I even reached the point where I was 300 pounds and I was a personal trainer.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I realized very quickly that a lot of things, you know, one was that a lot of my clients were training with me because, you know, my body was enabling them to not have to train quite so hard themselves, you know, kind of enabled them. You know, whereas then when they were working with Arnold, it was, you know, over there in the big weight section, you know, they felt intimidated and that sort of thing. But on the reverse side of it, not only was I enabling them, but I was giving them something else, which was a unique understanding of, you know, what their struggles were. And I began to see more and more that, you know, what's really going on here is something emotional beneath the surface with these types of people, that, you know, they continuously self-sabotage, you know, their success. And I realized, you know, getting success for my clients made getting success for me. So I really turned my attention away from the physical aspects of fitness and began studying subconscious behaviorism, clinical hypnotherapy, NLP, psychology, and really understanding the root emotional causes. And for 18 years, that's what I've specialized in as a therapist, you know, is working with clients with body image issues and overcoming, you know, weight loss self-sabotage. And, you know, since then I've lost, from the pictures on the book, you can see I've lost about 125 pounds, you know, and have managed to, you know, keep that off and have also been able to get that type of success for my clients.
Very, very interesting story. I know it's very compelling when I read it, and I could certainly relate to it as a man going through life's phases, and it is a journey in so many ways. So let's talk about that. I know you've mentioned briefly about the things that kind of led you to where you are at today. What are the specific life epiphanies that led you to the physical and spiritual journey? Because your book is weaved with a lot of the spiritual essence that helps you to be who you are today.
Well, I think a lot of it just came from having too many of the same experiences over and over again. That, you know, when you continuously repeat the same pattern, you know, you begin to look and see that, okay, there's something deeper going on beneath the surface. And I think, like a lot of people, you know, for me, there's those dark nights of the soul, those periods of time that you know, just say, hey, something's got to change, you know. And I can remember being, you know, 300 pounds, almost paralyzed, recovering from a back surgery, having, you know, gone through losing weight, gaining weight, losing weight, gaining weight, which obviously had a profound impact on my body and my back and these types of things, and lying there and realizing, you know, something's got to change. You know, I keep doing the same things. I manage to lose weight. I regain it. You know, I wasn't any happier. You know, as a matter of fact, one of the most, you know, so I would say really there were two really profound experiences. One was as far as epiphanies, one was that point where I was 300 pounds and I was lying on my back, partially paralyzed, thinking something's got to change. I've lost weight. I've gained it. I've been miserable. I've, you know, that's reflected in my social life. And then after that, you know, my idea of changing that was really, you know, focusing on kind of the conscious willpower. Like, this time I'm going to push harder. I'm going to, because, you know, I was in so much pain from the life I was living. And I ended up reaching a point where I was in really fitness model shape. And I looked like I always wanted to look at that point.
Yeah.
And that's when the second epiphany came, which was I still wasn't happy. You know, as a matter of fact, I was probably more insecure and felt worse about myself than I ever had. You know, because it just really, it wasn't genuine. It wasn't a true change on the inside, you know, in terms of, you know, my body didn't manifest, this new body didn't manifest as a result of really changing my beliefs and coming from a good place, but more so the fear of not being good enough. And that was my second epiphany, which was, hey, you know, we really gotta, this can't just be an outside job. It's got to be an inside job. And I got to figure out what that means. And I got to get it done, you know, especially if I'm going to share it with other people.
At the times that you were going through all this, do you feel like you were fear-driven?
I felt, you know, I don't know that I would have put it in those terms then. Mm-hmm. To some degree, I probably certainly would have. I would have said, at the time, I would have said I was pain-driven. But, you know, looking back now, I would definitely say that I was fear-driven, you know, at that, definitely that subconscious level. But it's, you know, it's that fear of, you know, not being good enough, that fear of, you know, needing to, you know, feel like you're adequate, you know, that you're what you want to be and kind of move forward, you know, from that standpoint.
Very interesting. Why did you write Fat to Fearless?
Well, the original, you know, basically it's the culmination of 18 years of, I guess over 18 years now of clinical work with weight loss. And, you know, I continued to have just really what was amazing success with clients. You know, it was that came from really my unique vantage point. You know, I was the only person I'd known that had three really powerful components. You know, one was, you know, I had the education in fitness and, you know, I was a medical exercise specialist. I had 1.8 personal training certifications. I taught personal training courses, certification courses. You know, I had the psychological background as a clinical hypnotherapist, subconscious behaviors, understanding all the elements of the mind. But kind of tying that together was my own personal experience. You know, there was clients would come into me, and there was almost nothing they would say to me that I couldn't almost finish their sentences. You know, I could say, yeah, you know, so you feel like this. I understand. That makes you do that. That makes you want to eat. And, you know, and so kind of that synergy of those things, I found that I was really able to help people in a way that it seemed like no one else was at the time. No, and that wasn't a result of me being just so amazing or wonderful. If anything, it was a result of kind of the pain that I'd went through and my own really almost maniacal focus on solving my own problems. But, you know, there just came a point where I was thinking, you know, I can only see so many people in private practice, and I really need to share this with the world. I really need to get this out there to those people that are just struggling with weight loss day in, day out. They lose weight, they regain it, they feel horrible about themselves, and they really just don't know what's going on. You know, they're trying the new diets, and they're trying the new pills, and they're trying the new fitness programs, and they always end up in the same place. How can I share this with people? And I wrote Fat to Fearless to do that.
You did an excellent job. I think one of the most important thing about this book and your program and so forth, you are coming across from the heart, you're very genuine, and you are speaking from an experiential standpoint of view because you've gone through it yourself. I think that is a very powerful statement to make.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, kind of like I was saying before, I think in my own private practice, that always was really the what tied it all together and what continues to do that for people that I see, whether I see them online, you know, through online or Skype sessions or in my office here in Orlando, is they know that I'm someone that, you know, understands what they've gone through, you know, at all the way to the extreme, being 300 pounds and, you know, and all the way down at kind of all of those different levels. And I also understand, you know, the issues that drive emotional eating, that create these types of, you know, self-fulfilling, you know, prophecies with your body. You know, they're not isolated to just your weight. You know, the issues that drive emotional eating are the same issues that are creating relationship problems, that are causing self-sabotage in other areas of life. So when they come in, you know, we're very quickly able to, from my own experience, you know, very quickly able to begin to see how what the real root cause is and how it's really, it's not just weight, it's impacting their entire lives.
So true. How is your book different from other weight loss books out there in the market?
Well, the Fat to Fearless is really about dealing with the deep emotional subconscious causes of being overweight. What it is not is it's not a diet book. You know, so I'm not going to be giving you diets or nutrition, and it's not a fitness book. Because the secret is that every diet in the world pretty much works. You know, some work better than others, some are healthier than others. But if you actually stick with it, you're going to get results. It's the same way with the fitness program. Some fitness programs are better designed and work better than others and work faster. But even if you just do something every day, you're going to get results. The problem isn't that. You know, the problem isn't that, you know, finding the right program. You know, we live in the information age. So, you know, I can Google and figure out how to build a space shuttle. You know, I certainly can Google and find out, you know, with a multi-billion dollar weight loss industry, if there's a secret out there, you're going to find it on the internet. So, you know, my book is about not finding the diet or the fitness program. It's about fixing what keeps you from sticking with those things. Mm-hmm. It's about healing the issues that cause you to, you know, regain the weight, that cause you to sabotage yourself, and doing that at a deeper level, at that subconscious level, understanding what's going on, what's the real problem that I can't lose weight, why do I, you know, always go off my diet, and what does this have to do with all the other areas of my life, and how do I begin to heal that?
What does fear have to do with weight loss?
Well, fear has a lot to do with a lot of the things that we sabotage ourselves with. You know, at the conscious level or even kind of that like semi-conscious level, fear drives a lot of our behavior to begin things. You know, for instance, that fear, which is very much linked to that pain of being overweight, like we were talking about earlier, that fear of, oh, you know, I'm people are going to find me unattractive, or, you know, I feel ugly, or I feel not good enough, and that kind of that pain and that fear a lot of times drives us to begin and pushes us forward. But at a deeper level, at a subconscious level, there's as much fear as there is of not being being what you want to be, whether that's thin or muscular or, you know, having that swimsuit body or whatever your idea of that is. At a deeper level, there's also the fear of achieving those things. You know, there's a very powerful mechanism, you know, that's clinically referred to as secondary gains, which is when we consciously want something, but we have a secondary gain, meaning that there's a subconscious benefit from not achieving it, and our subconscious actually will fight us on that. And with the subconscious mind being over 90% of our mental functioning, it's going to always win. You know, so, you know, a lot of times we're afraid, you know, of what it means to lose weight. You know, we have these ideas of, you know, if you ask anybody that's overweight, has struggled with that their entire life, and you ask them, what are you going to do when you lose weight? They're going to have a list of things. They're going to say, oh, man, when I lose weight, I'm going to start dating, or I'm going to go back to college, or I'm going to have a better social life, or whatever that is. And they think that weight is what's holding them back. But the reality is, quite frequently, weight is a safety mechanism for them. Because at a deeper level, you know, the weight has manifested as a result of subconscious beliefs of maybe from childhood of being, you know, unworthy, unlovable, not good enough, whatever that is. And those beliefs at a deep subconscious level, they're afraid that, God, man, what if I'm just not good enough? What, you know, I want a date, but what if nobody wants me? Or what if I can't cut it in college? Or what if I, going back to school, or what if I want this social life and, you know, people don't like me? So weight actually is a protective mechanism quite frequently. It's a kind of a mechanism where as long as I have this weight, I'm able to tell myself this is going to happen in the future. But when I start to lose weight, you know, when I reach that point, there's that subconscious fear of, oh my God, now I've got to do this. I've actually got to go out and begin these things I said I was going to do, and I don't know that I can do it. So subconsciously, they'll begin to sabotage their weight loss. And, you know, it's so fear plays a very powerful role, both consciously and subconsciously, in weight loss. And really in any area of life where there's a goal that we've strived for years, but for whatever reason that we don't understand, we continuously sabotage our progress when we get close.
Sure. You're right about that. Is your book also for people who are happy with their weight?
Absolutely. Really, the program, the Fat to Fearless program, it's kind of universal truths. You know, I see people for more than just weight loss. I see people for certain relationship issues and a lot of other things. And really, it's the same process, meaning it's the same process of you know, understanding what negative core beliefs may be in your life that are causing you to subconsciously self-sabotage. It's a process of understanding, you know, kind of the mechanisms of the mind that work against you when you're trying to make change until you learn how to make them work for you. So, you know, very much so, you know, I have, you know, I'm thinking of a client right now that I'm seeing for relationship issues, and I gave her Fat to Fearless, and I said, okay, you know, take the word weight loss and, you know, substitute that for, you know, relationship issue, you know, what her specific relationship issue was. And all of the things, same things very much apply because, you know, it's not a book about diets or nutrition or fitness. It's a book about healing subconscious issues that's keeping you from achieving something that you really, really consciously believe you want.
Very interesting. How should one use your book?
Well, the book is not the sort of book that you just read through. It's very much an experiential process. You know, each chapter has, at the end of it, it has a section which specifically says, you know, this is what you should take away from this chapter. You know, this is the homework, so to speak, for this chapter. And you're ready to move on in the next chapter. This is how you'll know you're ready to move on. And, you know, a lot of times that, you know, when you've been able to have certain awarenesses or you've, you know, mastered or at least gotten proficient at certain skills that you learn in that chapter. So it's very much a process of going through it. And, you know, there's a workbook and a program that goes along with it that's available this month that actually kind of helps that process as well. But it definitely isn't the sort of thing you read. You know, at the heart of understanding the way the subconscious mind works is the understanding that knowledge doesn't produce change. You know, like kind of like I was saying earlier, we live in the information age. You know, if knowledge produced change, I could just Google being happy and read a few articles and life would be wonderful, you know. But,
right.
But that's really not what it is. It's a matter of actually going through the process and doing the work. And that's, you know, really how the book and the program should be used.
I really like what you talked about just now, the key points at the end of the chapters and the exercises that you offer. I thought that was very thorough and it's very engaging as well. So I think it keeps the reader going, and in this case I would call even practitioner, the participants, to go from one step to the other. So you're really building them up and ushering them from one step in their life, in their journey, to the next.
Yes, absolutely. And that was, you know, that came from the process of writing the book. In that, you know, I taught clinical hypnotherapy for quite a while. And, you know, when my first iteration of this book really kind of came across as more of a textbook. And, you know, people, my close friends and people that read it said, wow, this is great if you're, you know, teaching this to professionals and practitioners. So, you know, my first task was the book. I went through about 3 rewrites of the book, of really trying to make it very simple, you know, as simple as it can be, as, you know, in depth of a topic as it is. Make it simple, make it easy to follow, make it, you know, point by point, so that even somebody that may go through and think, wow, you know, this is a lot of, you know, this is a lot of kind of deep stuff, it's still, at the end of the day, you know, it still breaks down to, okay, bottom line is, here's the key points, here's what I need to take from this, here's what I need to do. And in the whole program, there's even video tutorials that go along with each chapter where I take it even further and kind of put it into just more, even more so, everyday language, and even give a lot of examples and clinical case studies.
Wonderful. Can you share with us the weight loss laws of the mind? There are 11 of them.
Absolutely, yeah. There's different components to the Fat to Fearless book and the program. And, you know, I believe that at the cornerstone of my work is the belief that you have to work consciously, subconsciously, and environmentally. So, you know, consciously, obviously, their conscious mind that we think with, it's who, you know, as a general rule, most people, until they become more educated on this topic, kind of, that's who we believe we are. You know, our subconscious mind is over 90% of our mental functioning. It, you know, stores all of our experiences, you know, since, you know, birth, you know, and as well as all of our emotions. You know, it runs our autonomic nervous system, all that sort of thing. And environmental typically involves, you know, our environments, our friends, our jobs, our relationships are all a reflection of our inner core beliefs that reside in our subconscious. So our environments evolve to support us in maintaining that subconscious belief. So one of the things, kind of going back to those 3 components, conscious, subconscious, environmental, one of the things that I think is powerful is you do need to have an educational process with the conscious mind, you know, meaning that when you understand more about the way the mind works, you know, you're definitely able to be much more so in control. So one of the things that I do is I explain the weight loss, I call them the weight loss laws of mind, but really you can apply this to just understanding the way the subconscious mind works. You know, and the first one is called the law of reverse effect. And basically the law of reverse effect tells us that the greater the conscious effort, the less the subconscious mind responds. So, you know, in other words, the more I consciously try to do something, you know, the more I'm going to, you know, not be able to get my subconscious mind on board. And a great example of this is if you've ever tried to remember someone's name or something like that, and it's like the more you try, you just can't remember, and then as soon as you forget about it and stop, you know, worrying about it, it kind of pops into your mind. You know, and that also applies, you know, in a lot of other areas. You know, in weight loss, it's kind of like the more I try not to eat that cupcake, you know, the more that it's going to be there. So, you know, the law of reverse effect is definitely a powerful one to understand. There's also the law of impressed thought, which says that, you know, that every thought or idea impressed on the mind causes a physical reaction. And, you know, this you know, can manifest in a lot of different ways. You know, if you've ever you know, imagined or thought about, you know, there's a kind of a test that we do in hypnotherapy where we imagine people vividly imagine a lemon, you know, and all of a sudden their mouths will start to water. You know, and that's just an example of kind of the effect that that thought has on the body. You know, another great example is that, you know, people don't necessarily realize this, but, you know, you'll kind of go into, let's say, the grocery store and you start looking at that cake or that, you know, whatever it is in the glass container there, and you start imagining eating it or, you know, in some way, your subconscious mind says it anticipates you're going to eat that. It drops your blood sugar in response to this expected sugar. So the drop in blood sugar makes you crave it even more. So, you know, understanding the way that your thoughts impact and affect your body. And, you know, we can chunk that all the way up to even the way that chronic thought and emotion over time has the ability to impact the body in terms of disease even. So, you know, that's the law of impressed thought. The law of dominant effect is the next one. It says that the strongest emotion is what will be expressed in your life and in your body. And that's another great example of, you know, that ties into what I was talking about with fear and secondary gains. Consciously, you may really believe you want to lose weight, but if you've got that more powerful subconscious fear that may be holding you back, you know, that's always going to win out. The law of imagination effect says imagination and emotion are more powerful than knowledge when it comes to influencing the subconscious mind. And that very much ties into also the next one, which is the law of expectancy. And how that whole mechanism works is that, you know, what we expect tends to be realized. And mm-hmm. expectation is also a form of imagination. And most people who've been overweight their whole life or struggled with being chronically overweight, they have a really hard time imagining at a deep emotional level what it's like to be the person they want to be in terms of weight loss. And most people, when they start a diet, if you really get down to it, they don't really expect to achieve the results. On some level, they failed so many times doing that, but they're kind of, you know, there's a part of them that says, God, you know, maybe this isn't going to work, or it's probably going to be like next time, or like last time. And that, you know, causes the subconscious mind to sabotage. You know, the law of repetitive effect simply says that if something's repeated often enough, it you know, influences the subconscious. So that's one of the mechanisms, both through the hypnotherapy audio sessions that come with the Full Fat to Fearless program, as well as a lot of the exercises in the book that we use to begin to reprogram the subconscious mind. The law of last experience says that the last thing we experience about a situation or event tends to be what sticks with us. You know, so an example of that is we might go out on a date, and date may be absolutely wonderful, you know, but if the last thing the person says to us is insulting or invalidating, that's going to pretty much be our predominant memory of the event. You know, and that has a lot to do in terms of understanding of how our experiences throughout the day impact us emotionally and how those emotions may cause us to reach for food. The law of subconscious acceptance is the next one, and it tells us that, you know, once a belief has been adopted by the subconscious mind as true, it acts on those beliefs until it's replaced by another belief. And that's important to understand, because until you do the type of work that is in the Fat to Fearless program, whatever beliefs you have from childhood that have been manifesting, you know, in your life that has been causing this weight issue, they're not going to change. As a matter of fact, when you understand the mechanisms of how the subconscious mind works, it's a kind of a psychological machine designed to reinforce what it believes. So, you know, it's definitely not going to change on its own until you do, you know, that type of work. The next one is the law of diminishing opposition, which says that, you know, every thought, action, or suggestion, you know, creates less opposition in the subconscious mind to repeating it in the future. So simply put, the more times we tell ourselves we're going to lose weight and we don't do it, we don't follow through, the easier it is to not follow through the next time. And, you know, that also translates into fitness and really any other areas of life that we're having issues with. You know, the law of pain and pleasure is number 10. And that law basically talks about how the subconscious mind first moves away from pain and then secondarily towards pleasure. And it's important to understand how that works in terms of motivation, you know, because a lot of times, you know, people, I work with a lot of medical weight loss clinics, and the doctors will say to me, you know, we don't understand it. It's the people that are getting the most success that get halfway to their goal that you know, will stop their program and regain their weight. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Some of it is just simply the subconscious self-sabotage we've talked about. But there's also this pain-pleasure mechanism where people will quite frequently begin a diet because they reach, or a weight loss program, because they reach a certain threshold of pain. You know, something happens that tips them over. You know, they saw themselves in the mirror that one day and from a particular angle, and they were like, oh, I got to do something. Or they couldn't fit into these clothes, or you know, their husband, you know, got this new young secretary or whatever it is. And so they begin this program based on pain, you know, the desire to move away from this pain. Well, the problem is that the pain is linked to, their motivation is caused by pain, and their pain is linked to weight. You know, so as their weight decreases, their pain decreases, their motivation decreases, and there comes a point where all of a sudden the motivation is now less than what those mechanisms were that caused them, the emotional pull that caused them to be overweight to begin with. So they begin regaining weight. So part of the process is learning to not only move away from pain, but instill in the subconscious mind that very powerful pull towards pleasure. You know, what is life really going to be like when I reach these goals? And the challenge is most people don't really know what that is. They don't know how to do that. You know, they think that moving towards pleasure is that's what they're doing, and it's really moving towards pain. you know, they'll say, you know, moving towards pleasure is I don't have to feel bad about myself when, you know, or they'll say it will be like I feel good when I put on my swimsuit. But if you really peek underneath the hood, the emotions that are there, I don't have to feel bad. So how do you really begin moving towards pleasure and install that into the subconscious mind? So, you know, that's an important mechanism. And then the last one and the most important is the law of subconscious certitude, you know, and it says that the subconscious mind always decides or always seeks to prove itself right. So if you have any of these beliefs of being unlovable or not good enough or unworthy or a loser or that I'm always going to be alone, your subconscious mind is always going to work to prove you right. And one of the most powerful ways to do that, especially in a society that puts, you know, being slim and attractive on a pedestal, is to make you overweight, is to sabotage your weight loss. So those are the laws of mind, the weight loss laws of mind, and understanding those and how to work with those are really also key to long-term weight loss success.
I have to tell the listeners, all this is just the beginning of the book.
Yes.
This is important because you have to understand what you're going to be walking into, and you need to understand where you're at in order for you to prepare for the future that you are trying to attain. And that brings us to the power of beliefs. What we believe influence our well-being. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Because you talk tremendously about beliefs in the book, and I really like your approach to it.
Sure, absolutely. You know, basically, our core beliefs are beliefs we form about ourselves usually in childhood. And because the subconscious mind seeks to prove us right, you know, those beliefs are always going to seem to, you know, be repeating throughout our lives. So the way that it works is that we have events in childhood that leads to us forming beliefs, and then those beliefs lead to us having emotions, and those emotions lead to symptoms. So if we break that down a little bit, the children learn at a tremendous rate. You know, if you've ever seen children in like a bilingual home, it's amazing how young they can speak multiple languages, where as an adult, that's not so easy to do, you know, in that time frame in that way. But, you know, children learn so quickly, and in that early period of life, they absorb so much. They, you know, how to walk, how to talk, social norms, you know, language, you know, all of these things. And one of the reasons they're able to do that is that their subconscious mind is wide open. What's called the critical factor in my book, I call it the critical gateway of the mind, which is kind of the psychological filtering mechanism between the subconscious and the conscious. That's not present yet in children. So they're just able to absorb all of this stuff into the subconscious mind, which is great in a lot of ways, like I said, for the learning and all of that sort of thing. But what's not so great is that any negative experiences are also going to kind of become embedded in the subconscious mind. And the problem is that as children, we're interpreting these experiences. You know, everything when you're a child is about, hey, what does this mean to me? And we're interpreting that based on the intellect and the emotional maturity of a 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old. You know, so it can be something like, you know, hey, you know, mom's never around, so mom must not love me. Now, mom may have a job that she's working to, you know, and working 3 jobs to support you because she loves you. But as a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old, you might not understand that. So you basically form the belief early in life that goes into the subconscious that, hey, I'm unlovable or I'm second best or whatever the case may be. And once you have that belief, you know, you begin to filter reality through it. You know, you begin to filter all of your experiences through it. So everything seems to confirm it. You know, if you know, mom comes home and she, you know, kisses your sister before she does you, oh, that just proves what, you know, what I've been thinking all along. And so interpreting, you know, your life and life events through this belief, you have emotions. And those emotions could be sadness, you know, shame, guilt, embarrassment, you know, anger, fear, you know, whatever it is. And from that, we at a very early age begin to seek ways to feel better. You know, we begin to self-soothe. Mm-hmm. And the soothing becomes the symptoms. And for people who are overweight and have chronically been overweight, the mechanism that they usually choose to soothe with is food. And whenever we choose a self-soothing mechanism, it has kind of 2 important components. You know, one, it obviously is soothing those emotions. But secondly, it has a side effect of creating an outcome that reinforces the original belief. So, in other words, if I'm feeling not good enough and if I believe I'm not good enough and unlovable and second best, and that causes me to feel angry or fearful or sad or ashamed or any of those emotions, I'm going to reach for food to feel better, because not only is it going to alleviate that, you know, those immediate emotions in the moment, but it's going to cause me to be overweight, which again just kind of reinforces the fact that I'm unlovable, not good enough, second best. So it's kind of this whole cyclical pattern of, you know, beliefs really driving, you know, all of our behaviors, all of our emotions, and this kind of cyclical pattern that we just can't get out of, that keeps us stuck, you know, that keeps us stuck being overweight, losing weight, gaining weight. You know, this also applies to obviously other areas of life too that we self-sabotage.
What is the greatest challenge one faces in his or her effort to change?
Well, I think the greatest challenge is, you know, when we're talking about something like this, when we're talking about people having struggled with being overweight their entire lives, you know, that's obviously different than, you know, I've got to learn to create a habit of, you know, getting up an hour earlier. That, you know, that type of change is one thing. But when we're talking about this type of deep change, the most important thing, I think, is, there are two components to it, I would say. One, people need to be willing to really look beneath the surface and face what's there and realize that it may be more than what they've realized it is. You know, that they may need to realize that, hey, I've got some stuff that I've been carrying around for a long time. You know, some emotional baggage that, man, that stuff's ugly. I don't want to look at that. I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to feel those feelings again. You know, because they stuffed that stuff away a long time ago. And they don't realize that when they stuff that stuff away, one of the ways they're able to stuff that away is by stuffing themselves. You know, that's one of those mechanisms. So they have to be willing to look at that stuff. But secondly, and I think this is really important, and this is, is really what an important part of the Fat to Fearless program, because you know, you talked about it being thorough and you know, the weight loss laws and minds just kind of being the beginning of it. The, you know, kind of what I just described a few minutes ago, this kind of cyclical pattern that keeps us stuck, there's a lot of mechanisms in there that kind of preserve that and cause us to self-sabotage. So if you take just one approach, or just, you try to look at, oh, I'm just going to kind of work on this one thing, you got all these other things that are working against you. So I think, you know, the most, you know, other than being willing to do the work, is understanding that, you know, this is a, you've got to go through the whole process. You know, you've got to look at, you know, what's going on consciously in my mind, what's going on subconsciously, what's going on environmentally. How do I go through a process of working on all the things that are, you know, causing this problem so that I'm actually able to heal it, you know, as opposed to, you know, well, I'm just going to work on this one thing, but, you know, there are all these other, you know, mechanisms of the mind, things in my subconscious that are going to work against me. So I think it's important to look at, you know, resolving belief systems, looking at understanding how to use the laws of mind to consciously work with you, understanding what changes you need to make in your environment, you know, kind of looking at the whole approach. And, you know, obviously having a program to do that. And I think, you know, that's really, you know, one of the great things about the Fat to Fearless program is that, you know, is looking at that work, you know, anybody would look at that and be overwhelmed and think, wow, you know, there's a lot of stuff I've really got to do, you know, if I'm going to really change this. And that was really what the program in the book is about, is how do we systematize this, make it easy, and take people through a process that's going to lead to this type of transformation.
Hypnosis plays a very important role in your approach to this program. Tell us a little bit about how it will help to stop our yo-yo weight cycle.
Sure, absolutely. Well, you know, hypnosis, first of all, most people, when they think about hypnosis, their ideas of that is what they've seen on TV and, you know, stage shows and that type of thing. And, you know, the reality is that the majority of that stuff is fiction. And that, you know, actually, you know, clinical hypnotherapy is very different than that. You know, it's not about taking control of people's minds, you know, in hypnosis. You're actually in complete control. You know, but you're choosing to kind of, you know, go along with the process and, you know, cooperate with the practitioner to access your subconscious mind. But, you know, it's definitely not kind of a being out of control thing. You know, you're aware of what's going on. You know, you're not as unaware or kind of in a sleep state like you see on TV. So for one thing, is that, you know, people need to understand that their understanding of hypnosis and certainly clinical hypnotherapy is probably very different from what it actually is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hypnosis is basically used as one of the tools you know, that one of many tools, you know, in the program that we use to kind of begin to make these changes. And, you know, there's a hypnotherapy, you know, education kind of has a wide range, you know, in the United States. And, you know, the vast majority of the people that are out there that are practicing kind of have we'll call it level one training, so to speak, mm-hmm. which is kind of this type of thing where I'm going to put you in the hypnosis and you're going to be different. Okay, you're no longer going to have these cravings and that sort of thing. And that, you know, that has a place, but that's, you know, at best kind of supporting material. The real type of clinical hypnotherapy you want to do that, you know, I do in my private practice and online sessions and even some of the processes in the audio program is really designed to allow you to have direct access, dialogue with your subconscious and understand what's going on. You know, being able to communicate with kind of that inner child, that emotional part of you that just wants to eat to feel better, and kind of open that dialogue and begin that transformation.
Can your book and program work for people who haven't had success with the hypnotherapy route?
Absolutely. The, you know, as far as the work that I do in private mm-hmm. practice here in Orlando, as well as online with clients, you know, I would say at least half the people that I see have had some type of experience with hypnosis where it wasn't successful. And that's, yeah. you know, primarily, again, comes from, you know, there's very few practitioners out there that really have the type of education and training that kind of goes to, you know, beyond what, you know, that kind of programming level of just telling people they're going to be different. And so, you know, for the majority of these people, you know, that haven't had success because of the level of training of the practitioner. You know, mm-hmm. there's many different ways of getting people into hypnosis kind of based on their personality, you know, what psychic defense mechanisms they have in place. The practitioner really needs to have an understanding of you know, what that, of being able to diagnose that, so to speak, and then determine what methods to use. And to do that, they obviously have to have a pretty big toolbox of, you know, well, what type of hypnosis am I going to use? You know, and even now in private practice, a lot of the work that I do is conversational, more what's called Ericksonian hypnotherapy, where, you know, we don't even necessarily need to use the formal trance state. But the great thing about the book and the program is, you know, there's certainly the powerful hypnotherapy audio component, but there's also processes in there that, you know, work to, you know, when the person goes through, to kind of allow them to begin to associate into different aspects of their subconscious mind. And, you know, once upon a time, hypnosis, you know, the model was, you know, I'm going to put you in hypnosis and I have, you know, I'm you know, this sort of thing. And now, as it's evolved, you know, to your more experienced and your more successful practitioners, it's really a model of empowerment. It's about, mm-hmm. let me give you tools and skills to, you know, not just, you know, change you right now, quote-unquote change you, but, you know, mm-hmm. teach you how to do these things for yourself, you know, give you some skills to be able to, you know, access your own mind's potential. And, you know, a lot of these processes in the book, which are kind of hypnotic processes, allow people to do that. You know, it's a skill they learn, you know, and it's a skill they'll practice in the program. You know, for instance, there's a process that I have where they can actually dialogue through journaling directly with the inner child, that emotional part of them that wants to eat, you know, so that whenever they're having cravings and they're feeling all of these things, you know, that make them want to reach for food, they can actually sit down, go through this process, talk with that part of themselves, and that part can really express what it wants, because it really doesn't want food. You know, what it wants is to feel better, you know, and the process is finding a better way of feeling better and eliminating the things that kind of make you feel bad to begin with.
That brings me to, there's a chapter in your book, Reparenting Your Inner Child. You mentioned inner child several times. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure, absolutely. You know, there's basically, you know, three primary, what we'll call ego states in our psyche that we deal with, that, you know, essentially it's the inner child, the inner critic, and, you know, the kind of our adult conscious mind. And the inner child is basically our original self. It's who we were when we were born, before anybody ever told us or we got any ideas that we needed to be different in any way. And, you know, as we all know, that self didn't last too long before starting to be changed, you know, before starting to get messages about, oh, you know, you really need to do this if you're going to be loved, or, you know, this is how you should be, or this is, You know, good boys act like this. Good, you know, good girls act like this. You know, children should be seen and not hurt. You know, so immediately that emotional self, that original self that you were, begin to get ideas that it wasn't good enough as it was, you know. And that can happen a lot of different ways, you know. And again, it's kind of happening at that young age where the subconscious mind is wide open and it gets embedded in there. But it can happen, you know, certainly through, you know, a lot of the people I deal with have, you know, food is a way of coping with childhood sexual abuse or physical abuse or abandonment issues or neglect. You know, it can certainly happen through that mechanism that you know, those experiences that inner child component can be, you know, emotionally wounded. But like I was also using fairly benign experiences of, you know, well, mom just isn't around a lot. You know, the bottom line is that child is taking in these ideas and beginning to, you know, form beliefs that cause it to feel bad about itself. And that inner child part of us is still inside of us. You know, we carry it around with us. We just, you know, begin to suppress it.
Mm-hmm.
And we begin to not feel our emotions. And, you know, we can only do that so long before, you know, it reaches out for relief. And, you know, typically it's food. You know, certainly it's food for people who have weight issues. So, you know, part of the program is being able to get into that inner child, that emotional component of yourself that's hurting, and has those negative beliefs, and learn how to heal that, you know, so that, you know, that emotional part of yourself really does feel that it deserves the best. You know, whether that's, you know, the best body or the best relationship or, you know, just, you know, the best life in general.
Ultimately, Asher, is your program easy to implement and follow?
The program is very easy to implement and follow. You know, kind of like we were talking about in terms of, you know, each chapter is broken down and there's exercises. Mm-hmm. And certainly if the person has the whole program, they've also got tutorial videos and even some programs where they have direct access to me. You know, the challenge is the willingness to do it. You know, meaning that, you know, there's that compulsion I think some people have where, you know, they'll kind of read the first chapter and then, you know, they'll think, well, I'll go back and do the exercises later. You know, and then they kind of move on to the next chapter. And, you know, this is a book that's not designed to give you information, but it's a program that's designed to produce change. You know, and change is an experience. So it's very easy to follow. They just have to be willing to go through the process, you know, and they may go through a chapter and it may be, you know, 2 or 3 weeks that it takes them to, you know, really go through and kind of master those skills before they move on to the next chapter. But it is something that very much builds on itself. Because, you know, you might be able to sit down and read through the whole book in 3 or 4 days, but you're not going to change your subconscious mind and really heal these deep emotional wounds in 3 or 4 days. You know, ideally it's designed to, you know, you go through the process, and as you go through the book, you know, you're going through the book at the same rate at which, you know, you're transforming your subconscious, you're healing these wounds, you're installing these new beliefs in your subconscious mind that are going to really support you in long-term permanent weight loss.
Wonderful. Do you have a motivational pitch for individuals who are procrastinators?
Well, ultimately, you know, the issue is that procrastination is, again, another one of these mechanisms that, you know, are keeping us from reaching our goals. You know, so quite, you know, really what it comes down to is, you know, kind of like I said earlier on, is that, you know, you can take the book and you can put anything in there, you know, other than, you know, weight loss and essentially anything that you want to transform at a deeper level. So the first thing for a procrastinator to do would be to, again, look at the program in terms of procrastination. You know, what is it, what benefit am I getting out of procrastinating? And quite frequently, again, it comes down to fear. You know, what if I'm, you know, what if I try this and it doesn't work? What if I try it and it does work? And then I actually have to do all these things I said I'm going to do when I lose weight, you know, and be happy. And I don't know that I'm ready for that. So, you know, really it's looking at procrastination and understanding, you know, hey, what am I getting out of not doing what I say I want to do? And, and you can apply the same principles to that.
Interesting. What advice would you like to give to health club owners and personal trainers on how to help overweight people lose weight and truly keep it off?
Well, you know, I think that one of the things is I think that there's an educational process that needs to take place. And this is something actually I'm in the process of doing, you know, with a company called, you know, Fitness Center Consultants, is, you know, we're putting together a program where, you know, health club owners, personal training studios, they're actually going to be able to give out a lot of this information. They're going to be able to, you know, free of charge, you know, give new members, old members, a lot of this material in terms of understanding, you know, why they self-sabotage and giving them some tools. So I think that for the most part, what needs to happen is that, you know, it's kind of the, that higher, you know, that organizational level of fitness needs to, what needs to happen there is the same thing that needs to happen at the individual level is, you know, hey, let's start looking at what's beneath the surface of this stuff. You know, there's a reason that people sign up and they don't quit. You know, when I was really focused in the fitness industry, you know, and that was where my work was, you know, 20 years ago, one of the statistics was that, you know, industry-wide was that 25% of people that joined a gym never walked back in the gym other than after the day they signed up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the only day they were there was the day that they actually joined the gym. You know,
yeah.
And that's, that says something, you know. So, you know, I think that what really needs to happen is that kind of revolution of marrying this type of understanding, this type of program, this type of, what's really going on that causes people to not follow through on fitness or exercise or diet with some of these physical programs. And that's why I, you know, specifically, you know, even with my background, left out fitness information or nutrition information from the program, because like I said, all of that stuff works, you know, no matter what gym you join. And I wanted to make it easy for health clubs and fitness centers or, you know, personal training studios, weight loss clinics, to be able to actually offer this material there. As a matter of fact, you know, we have a program, and if you go to my website, which is asherfoxweightloss.com, and go to the contact page, you know, any health club, fitness center, you know, weight loss center is more than welcome to contact me, and we can get them enrolled in that program to give out, you know, a lot of this material free to their members and clients and patients.
Wonderful. Do you offer private sessions?
Absolutely. I have a clinical practice here in Orlando, Florida, as well as I do sessions online, Skype. I do individual sessions. We also have a program that is starting up in a few weeks that's going to be kind of a group online program where we take people through the program and they, you know, it's educational. It allows me to do some group coaching, as well as, you know, provides a great support system for people. So whether it's in person, online, or individually online, or, you know, group, I offer all of that. And again, the website is asherfoxweightloss.com, A-S-H-E-R-F-O-X, weightloss.com, and you can contact me through that website, and I'm more than happy to, you know, work with people who are, you know, truly ready to make a change.
What would you like for the readers to gain from reading Fat to Fearless?
Well, ultimately, what I'd like for them to gain is true and lasting change. And, you know, and no one's going to get that from reading Fat to Fearless. People are going to get that from going through the Fat to Fearless process. So, you know, I guess the first thing I would like for people to do is realize that, you know, the book isn't about a reading experience. It's about an emotional experience and actually doing the work, you know. So, you know, people certainly are going to get insights. You know, I mean, I've had a lot of people, you know, I was just emailed the other day, but I won't mention the name because I don't know if you want me to, but
yeah.
a fairly influential, you know, author in the psychology field who, you know, had replied, and she said, you know, I've just read the book and I've had so many insights about, you know, why I'm sabotaging myself. So, you know, certainly if people just read the book, they're going to get a lot of insights and they're going to get something out of it, you know, and that's great and that's wonderful. You know, I've read a lot of books in my life, you know, we could label them self-help or psychology, and certainly I got something out of them, and, you know, cumulatively they enabled me to make some shifts and changes. You know, in fact, if you're listening, could certainly be a book like that for a lot of people. But if they actually just not read it, but go through the process, you know, it can be so much more than that, just very powerfully transformational.
Wonderful. Do you have other success stories from your clients that you can share with us?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, the great thing about, you know, the process is that, you know, it's what does success look like?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not just simply about weight loss. You know, it's about being happy and the changes that take place inside. You know, so a lot of times people will come in and they'll have kind of, you know, they'll be 100 more pounds overweight and they'll have this goal of, you know, I want this this model physique or this swimsuit body, that sort of thing. And the really great thing about a lot of the transformations that they make is that they'll lose weight, and they reach a point where maybe they've lost 70 pounds, and all of a sudden they look good, they're attractive, you know, and they realize they're happy. And that desire to lose that extra 30 pounds, you know, and they're healthy, that desire to lose that extra 30 pounds actually came from that negative place saying, hey, you got to look like this to be good enough. So, you know, it's a synthesis of, you know, kind of that homeostasis of being happy on the inside and your body being a healthy reflection of that. But, you know, I've had a lot of clients that have come in and, you know, they, again, weight, you know, there's that secondary gain mechanism, you know, weight serves a positive purpose for them. You know, they've been sexually abused, and weight is something that, you know, by being overweight, they believe it keeps them from being attractive to the opposite sex, or it's amazing the things that will come up for people. You know, I had a lady that, you know, when she hit like 42, she just started gaining weight, and she had no idea why. And, you know, she'd been thin her whole life, you know, and she came in, and we went through a lot of these processes, in fact, to figure this out, uncover what was going on subconsciously, you know, and come to find out her mom had died when her mom had been 42, and before her mom died, she had lost a lot of weight. You know, so somewhere in her subconscious mind when she was a child, she correlated, you know, 42, being thin, death, you know.
Yeah.
And so subconsciously, she just became driven to eat. You know, so there's a lot of stories like that in the book of, you know, understanding that, hey, there's something else going on here, and we need to fix that and heal that if we're going to really have long-term weight loss.
Wonderful. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Sure, absolutely. I you know, my recipe for living is based on my work, you know, as a clinical hypnotherapist, as a subconscious behaviorist, and really is kind of rooted in this one powerful understanding of the subconscious mind. And that is whatever we have in there in our subconscious is what's going to manifest in our lives. And then it kind of goes back to those beliefs. You know, if I believe I'm unattractive or unlovable or not good enough or, you know, what have you, I'm going to continuously make choices, decisions, invite people into my life that are going to prove that to me. And, you know, subsequently, if I believe that I'm worthwhile and I deserve the best life has to offer and I'm, you know, more than good enough, you know, I'm going to be subconsciously driven to create a life that mirrors that back to me. So, you know, I think that my recipe for living, you know, I think recipe is a very powerful word here because it really comes down to ingredients. You know, the ingredients that I have in my subconscious mind is what I'm going to cook and what's going to show up outside of myself. It's what's going to be the kind of my banquet of life, so to speak. So, you know, for me, I would say my recipe is, you know, you look at what's going on in your life, and if something's not quite right, if you continuously find yourself attracted to the wrong type of person, and you know you're single, or you know you have, you know, certain career pitfalls or financial pitfalls that are showing up, you look at that and you think, okay, that's coming from somewhere. You know, that there's something in my subconscious that this is a reflection of that. And you work backwards and you find out what's there and you heal that in your subconscious. And then you let, from there, it's just a simple matter of things beginning to manifest. You know, and I don't mean the word manifest in kind of that, you know, ethereal, magical kind of way. I just mean that in a simple psychological way that, you know, these are the processes, you know, of the psyche of the mind, the choices you make.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you look at what's going on, and if your life isn't what you want, you see there's something going on in my subconscious that's causing that. And you go through processes like this, you heal it, and, you know, you see the powerful impact that has on your life.
Fantastic. That's a beautiful recipe for living. Asha, I do want to ask you this. I know that you had mentioned about you're going to be doing a radio show starting next year. Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Actually, next month, the Asher Fox Show, and it's going to be a program that very much deals with a lot of relationship issues, relationship with others, relationship with yourself. So, like for instance, a lot of the Fat to Fearless processes are really understanding, you know, how the relationship with yourself works. You know, so it's going to be a powerful program. We're going to have a lot of great guests, you know, from a variety of fields, really just looking at how you better your life. And if people would like more information on that, I'm also offering a free series of subconscious videos that kind of go through the primary ways the subconscious mind sabotages weight loss and how to begin to change that. So it's a free video tutorial series that they can sign up for at my website, which is asherfoxweightloss.com. And when they'll get those are going to be coming out this month. They can go there today and sign up. And they'll also get notified about the radio program as well.
Fantastic. Asher, thank you again for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me in 2 weeks, Tuesday, January 13. My guest will be Tracy Weber, the owner and founder of Whole Life Yoga. She is also the author of the award-winning Downward Dog Mystery Series. Tracy and I will be discussing how yoga became a $27 billion industry with more than 20 million practitioners. We will also talk about her latest release, A Killer Retreat. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a happy new year. Asher, it has been a pleasure. Thank you again and have a very happy new year to you and your loved ones.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.